the most important growth that we're going to have as a parent happens in the middle of the chaos and the conflict and the frustration and the anger. And whether we grow after the fact, we realize, oh, the next day, oh, I didn't show up the way I wanted to, or we interrupt, it doesn't matter. That anytime we can pause and notice what we were doing, have more awareness, accept where we were, and then realize we can make a different choice moving forward, that can be life-changing when we accept that the growth doesn't happen outside of these moments that don't feel like they're going well. The growth happens in the middle of the moment. So.
Hey, midlifers, welcome to the Midlife Makeover Show. Are you ready to break free from your mundane midlife? Are you feeling trapped in a vicious cycle of rinse and repeat days? No matter if you're experiencing a divorce hangover, job burnout, or you just have the midlife blues, I got you. Hey, I'm Wendy, your hostess of the Midlife Mostest. I too was hit by midlife like a freight train. I too felt stuck in the same dull chapter. I wanted the clarity of how to create a new life beyond divorce and the courage to leave an unfulfilling career. But I kept telling myself that I wasn't worthy and it was just easier to stay in my comfort zone. Until I found a little secret, the freedom to live my life my way. In this podcast, you will learn how to achieve a vibrant midlife mind and body, how to create solid relationships through love and loss, and how to create an awesome second half of life. Grab your grande latte, pop in your earbuds, and let's get this midlife party started. Are there sights, sounds, or smells that remind you of a past traumatic event, causing you to fight, flight, or freeze? These physical and emotional responses are called triggers, and they happen to all of us. Triggers can be tricky, but the key is to stop the trigger in its tracks and turn the trigger into a treasure. Just like Dr. Nicole LaPera said, there's nothing negative about being triggered. It's a calling to heal our wounds. To help you heal those wounds, I created a free download called the Trigger to Treasure Technique, where you will learn the 4 steps on how to identify your triggers, how to control your triggers, and how you can move past your past so you can live peacefully in the present moment. Please go to wendyvalentine.com/trigger to receive your free download, and you can begin to turn your triggers into treasures. Welcome back to the Midlife Makeover Show. I'm Wendy Valentine. And on today's episode, we are speaking about a new topic here on the podcast. It's the topic of parenting. We've spoken about what to do with ourselves when the birdies leave the nest, but we have not spoken about how to build good relationships with our little bitty birdies, whether they are in or out of the nest. The relationship with your children goes on for the rest of your life, your children's lives, and even your grandchildren's lives. If you think about it, the relationship you have with your children can leave a powerful legacy that can create a ripple effect of love throughout several lifetimes. As a mommy of 3 grown boys, 21, 26, and 31, this topic is near and dear to my heart. So I'm excited to learn from our guest today. Her name is Andy. Oh, I forgot to ask you how to pronounce it.
Martineau.
Oh, I was going to say that. Okay. Andy Martineau. I got it right. She is a mom of 6, a reformed yeller. Oh my gosh, me too. I still yell a little bit sometimes. A best-selling author and the creator of Connect Method Parenting, a breakthrough parenting framework that leverages connection as the primary mechanism for influencing children. Her approach helps parents discover why their kids don't listen, and shows them the step-by-step process of regaining influence and building relationships that will last a lifetime. With hands-on experience raising her own children, ages 14 to 23, wow, and over 10 years of experience in parenting coaching, Andy has helped over 10,000 parents learn the parenting methodology that gets their kids to want to listen. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to dig in on this with you.
Yeah. So what inspired you to go into this fabulous niche of parenting and teaching about parenting?
Well, it was my complete utter failure at it when I started.
You were the guinea pig for all of us.
Oh, yes. I love how you said that. Yes, that's really good. I mean, I had them so fast. 6 kids in 8 years is just a lot of children really quickly. And so when number 5 came, it was very clear that I was completely out of my realm of capability. I just couldn't handle them anymore. And so that's when there's this one event that happened that really shifted it. I call it the Great Baby Powder Blizzard of 2007. And my oldest was at school. My youngest was asleep. So I had 3 running around the house and they had been super quiet. And that was great. I'd gotten the dishes done and the laundry done, all of the things. But then I realized they have been quiet for far too long for 3 toddlers. And so I went on the look for them and found them in the playroom, which was right off the kitchen, but it was a converted garage. And so there was just this tiny doorway that I had to peek into it to see what they were up to. And I heard some noise. So I thought, okay, they're all alive, which is something that is legit when they're small, you know, keep them alive because they're such a danger to themselves. But I peek in and I realize that everything is white and it smells like this fresh aroma of baby powder. And they had gotten these big, huge Costco sized bottles of baby powder and just doused themselves, the electronics, the furniture, the toys, and ruined a lot of things. And I had this explosive moment, which wasn't unlike me at the time. I was quite on edge all of the time. I think I was exhausted and feeling as though the kids were making my life tricky. And then feeling the impact of the failure. So all the shame and blame that came with that. And so I exploded and I started yelling, which I'm not proud of. But as I saw my 3-year-old, who was the instigator, his face just fell. And I had this miraculous moment. I hadn't done anything to deserve it at the time, but I had this miraculous moment where I was able to shift from mad to accepting and seeing the beauty in what they had done and realizing this isn't the end of the world, and handled it in a way I was really surprised and proud of. Took even a picture of the moment. I had to go get a real camera. That's how long ago it was. I had to get the real camera. And we cleaned it up fairly quickly. And as I stepped away from that day, the wheels started turning. What was it? Because no consequence was required, no punishments, no incentives, no bribes. All of the tools that I thought needed to be put in place to get my kids to obey me and listen were absent. And so it got me thinking, what in the heck just happened? And how do I do it again? And is it actually doable? Is it repeatable? And I'm a retired nurse. So at the time I was, you know, dabbling in and out of the workforce, but I was wanting the science to back it up. That was really important to me. Is there evidence that I can do this without ruining my kids? And so it started this chain reaction that eventually led me to helping other parents.
That is such a funny story. I'm sure like for all the moms out there, they could think of some of these stories themselves. I'll just tell mine really quick. I'll never forget that my oldest son, Alex, and I was a single mom at the time. And so I was living in Dallas and I had to drive like an hour just to take him to his little preschool, his Montessori school. And I had started a new job. So I wanted to make sure I get there early and everything. And I was like, all right, you need to get dressed. And I was like, and I was definitely a yeller during that time. And not like that, even this moment changed me too. And I can remember, I was like, hurry up, get your clothes on. And he's like, and I was putting his shoes on. He couldn't tie his shoes just yet. And so I was putting his shoes on and he's like, my feet. And the whole drive, like to preschool, he was like, my feet hurt. I was like, suck it up. I was like, you got So then when I picked him up from school that day, after like hours, you know, of settling down, I had a day at work, I was like a little bit more mindful and conscious of what I was doing and seeing and thinking. And so I looked down and I had put his shoes on the wrong feet. I felt so bad. And here he was trying to tell me that his feet hurt. And I was just ignoring him. And I was like, oh my God, I'm such a bad mother. but you know what though? Like after that moment, I remember thinking like, I've got to be more mindful. I've got to pay attention to what the heck I'm saying and I'm doing. And maybe I wasn't perfect after that. I still had some yelling moments. But now that they're like grown men, that's even changed a lot too, which what we can talk about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm curious though, how were your parents with you? Were they, you know, short fuse? Were they patient? How were they? What did you learn from them that you liked and what you didn't like?
Yeah. Overall, I would say my parents are great parents, but they were also using some of the techniques that I use, that their parents used, with this idea that consequences and teaching them a lesson and, you know, letting you know if you disappoint, they use some of that too, but so I inherited that, but also just that's inherited from society. You know, that's kind of what we're shown everywhere. It would be very unusual if they had stepped completely out of that, but they did have moments where they were incredibly, well, lots of moments. I'm not just trying to isolate. They did have also teach me, I should say, lots of times of just unconditionally accepting me. So when I think I was 13, which is far too old to do this and it's embarrassing, but it's in my book. So it's out there. So it's not like I'm hiding it anymore. But I had this idea. I was sharing a room with my sister and I wrote, we decided we were artists, which our family is not artists at all. We took Sharpies and decided to make a mural on our wall with Sharpies. It really ended up being just terrible stick figures, misshaped. It was awful. And I remember when my mom came down and saw it, and she didn't say a lot. I could tell she was trying to process what is happening, what has just begun in this room.
That was her baby powder moment, right?
Like that was her baby powder moment. And my sister and I, who were sharing the room, still cannot believe we did this. But she just didn't really say much, but she just allowed us to live with this terrible mural on our wall for years. I think I was almost a senior in high school before we were able to. And it wasn't like you have to live with it, because, you know, it was just, hey, okay, well, this is where it is. And if you want to buy the paint, you know, I had to provide the resources to get it covered up. And we didn't for a while. And they didn't really, there might have been a time where we just, you know, it was just not talked about. We just let it up there. But that was a great example of, for me, grow, you know, as I went into being a parent of my own, although I didn't copy this one too early on. It took me a while. I was still a learner. But to accept the situation without making this big judgment about it and just allow the child to move through it. I wish I had caught on to that sooner, but that was a beautiful lesson that my parents modeled for me in that example. And overall, I feel as though they were wonderful parents, very loving, but also, you know, used the typical control mechanisms. And part of it could be me too. I'm very hard on myself. I'm a recovering perfectionist along with a reformed dealer. Yeah. And so I don't even remember, honestly, if sometimes they were even saying something or if it was just my perception of I have messed up. And I definitely brought that into parenting of, hey, I want to get this all right and I want to be perfect. Yes. And that perfectionistic cycle in any realm, but especially parenting, where you're confronted with failing a lot as you maybe get overstimulated with your nervous system, because they're, especially when they're little, there's just so much happening. It was something I had to work through and learn to be gentle with myself. And I remember when somebody said, you could be gentle with yourself, and it being this mind-blowing moment of, really? Is that safe?
Yeah.
Is that allowed? I don't think that's going to work. You don't understand. If I don't keep beating myself up, I'm never going to fix this. And that was, you know, part of my personal journey, letting that go. And I think that was just part of me. So I think I was hypersensitive to any feedback that I got growing up, because I'm the oldest, oldest girl. So, you know, wanted to be perfect.
We have a lot in common, the people pleasing and the perfectionism. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Awful.
Yes.
But you know,
it's a good combo. Like
oh God, it's awful. It's awful.
I know. And it's like this combo.
I made
like
a really good French pastry chef though, with my perfection.
Oh, I bet. You know? Yeah. You have to be precise.
So, you know, one thing that popped my mind is that, like, even those moments that we talked about, it's an opportunity for growth, not just for the child, but also for the parent.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of my favorite quotes, I think Nelson Mandela said it, and I'm going to probably slightly misquote it, but he said, I never fail. I only learn or grow. Something to that effect.
Mm.
And I love that. This idea of, it's never a failure unless I don't allow myself to learn from it and grow from it. Then if I let it keep me stuck, then you could classify it as that, but there doesn't ever have to be a failure. It can always be a growth opportunity. So
Oh yeah, that's that's like the that's the through line in my life.
Exactly.
As I look back, I'm like, and now, I mean, I now that I think about it, like when you teach that to children, whether they're, you know, their early years or their teenage years, you are teaching them to look for those opportunities for growth, for when someday, when they're having their, you know, what did you call it? The moment with the baby powder.
Oh, the I baby call it the great explosion. Baby powder blizzard of 2007.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
become a moment in time for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll have those moments in life, maybe not necessarily the baby powder, but having their mm-hmm. boss yell at them or how they might screw up doing something in their life. Like, and to know that it's not a mistake, it's an opportunity for growth and for a retake. Like, I don't believe in mistakes. It's like, I believe in retakes. Like, okay, let's take a look at this and how can I learn and how can I pivot and how can I grow from it? Right. But if you think about it, just what I was saying earlier about you are leaving a legacy, like how you are with your children affects so much more than we think. How they will
so
be
many
with
generations.
Their children. Yeah, and with their partners in life and with their boss, like everything. It impacts everything.
It does. And that mirror you're talking about, how we learn that there's no such thing as a failure. And so we're modeling learning and growing. And then our kids get that chance too. But if we don't get that, then we're going to be hard on them when they mess up. And we're going to be worried that they're going to not get into college or they're not going to have a work ethic because they're not doing their chores or they're not doing their homework.
Yeah.
And that perpetuates the cycle. So you're absolutely right. It's so beautiful, but we have to learn the lesson first. And that's what a lot of the parents I work with, it clicks finally for them. And it's what I had to click for me for it to finally pivot.
Mm-hmm.
Is I am the model. I am the mirror.
You know,
if I want them to learn this, I've got to be doing it myself. So important.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to the perfectionist and the people pleaser, usually along with that is that you're also a fixer, at least I was.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I was a nurse. I was fixing people for my profession.
So how did that come into play with your parenting and not like, okay, let me, you know, like one of your children, you know, they're doing something. You're like, I know they're doing it wrong. Let me fix it. How do you have that happy medium of letting them be independent, but you kind of want to help them? Where do you, how do you create that happy medium?
This is a good question. Well, I always try to remember that there's nothing to be fixed. Like there's nothing broken. This is just information. And so I want to be a scientist about it and say, okay, why are they having this reaction to me, or why don't they want to do homework, or why are they being so confrontational with their sibling or whatever it is, and not see it as something to be fixed, but something to be understood.
Mm.
And that's with me too, you know, it softens the criticalness in my brain that I want to have and say, this makes sense. And understanding the nervous system and the way we get activated and the little capital T traumas to baby T traumas that our nervous system creates for us to protect us and the chemicals that are released in our body and the way sometimes we're truly throttled from our highest potential just because of all of the things happening in our life.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with our kids. So it's if they're showing up in a way where I think, okay, they're way below their potential today. Like, my brain says, fix them. They're not being a hard worker or they're being really rude. And I just want to shift that part of my brain. That's what I'm trying to do. And that I've learned to do pretty well, but I'm not perfect. I'm not going to say I get it right every single time, but I am aware of it. But most of the time I'm able to see it from a place of, okay, this is just where they're at right now. And it's okay.
Yeah.
This is not a problem. And if I understand this and create safety for my child to be able to process whatever's happening for them, then we move through it. And then, you know, their prefrontal comes back on and they're able to function in such a better way that typically what I thought needed to be fixed just resolves.
Yeah.
Or with a little bit of guidance, you know, or maybe they need to learn a skill or something, but we're able to transition into whatever will improve that without looking at them as broken or looking at them as need to be fixed. So
I think too, like even allowing them to fall and so that they can learn how to get up on their own.
Oh, for sure. for them to say you can fall and that doesn't define you. That's just
right.
The culmination of all the factors that happened that day. And so, yeah. And you're safe to recover exactly where it's not who they are. It's just what happened that day. So powerful.
Yeah. How has it changed for you with the adults now that you have your adult children? How has that relationship shifted for you? And do you find yourself kind of acting differently towards your adult children than, and you still have your teenagers at home?
At home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you,
yeah, I have four adults and two at home that are teenagers still.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in some ways it hasn't changed at all. And in some ways it's very different because they get to go make their own choices and they might ask for my input, but they're not at all obligated. And I need to, you know, I've had to really let that go and say, great, I support you with whatever. So in that regard, you know, yeah, it has and it hasn't. There's a beautiful thing, and you probably have seen this too, because it sounds like you got this dialed in for yourself too, of when the relationships are solid and there's a level of trust.
Yeah.
That is the through line. That carries through to the relationship, no matter what age they are, on both ends. So I need to give more autonomy. I don't have the stewardship, you know, the responsibility like I used to.
Yeah.
But what's beautiful is they still, a lot of them still call and ask for, you know, advice or help. It's beautiful. I feel like it's a natural progression.
Yeah. And it carries on.
I'm not.
And that's really what you want, right? You want the relationship to evolve organically. But let me ask you this. If you didn't have that mindset of that parenting mindset, you know, through their teenage years or their younger years, and then they're already out of the nest.
Yeah.
How do you rebuild a relationship that might have been broken, or you feel like you've lost that? I mean, sometimes even with my boys, and this could be like the little abandoned Wendy inside of me feeling like, am I not enough? Why haven't they called this week? You know, like I still get that. I'm like, oh my gosh, girl. But how do you, like, if you feel like you've lost connection or you feel like you want to repair? I mean, we're not all great parents for sure. And like, if you've had a rough, you know, time with the child or something, how do you rebuild and regain that and create a new relationship, a healthy, loving relationship?
This is so good. it starts with how we're showing up.
Yeah.
And our thoughts about them. If we still are having thoughts that are creating judgment or resisting what their decisions are, it's going to be hard to rebuild that relationship because they're going to feel that from us. So first getting to a place of love and acceptance is absolutely critical, because without that, you don't have a lot to build on. And then I think dropping expectations, which I totally get what you're saying with, I want them to call and touch base, and they will when they're ready. But when we are needy and graspy and thinking they should be calling us,
like dating, like, you know?
I know. Exactly. I've reached out. I texted them. They didn't even text me back. Why? You know, whatever it is.
Especially if they're boys.
Right. They're busy, you know. And when we can decide, hey, I'm going to show up the way I want to show up in the relationship, I'm going to drop the expectations of how I think they should show up, that's the foundation of rebuilding. It's I'm going to have connection with you, and I'm going to love and show up for you. And I'm not going to need you to do something to validate me.
Mm.
We're not going to be enmeshed. I'm going to let you, you're an adult and you get to make whatever choices you want. Nobody wants to be in a relationship where they're feeling, you know, that graspy, needy,
mothered,
validate me.
Yes.
Tell me I'm a good mom, you know?
Yes.
And they're just going to be like, whatever. I'm not going to do that anymore. I had to deal with you for a while. I don't want to deal with you anymore. And we don't want them to feel that way. So I love the analogy I love to use that gets my brain in the right place is thinking about how my kids, and I probably had this too, but it's just been more prominent with my kid. Like my girls love Taylor Swift. They adore her. And they know so much. Yeah, she's amazing in so many ways. But they know a lot of things about her birthday, favorite things, you know, all these, the what outfits she wore on her last concert, all these things. But Taylor knows nothing about my girls. But that doesn't prevent them from having this amazing connection with her and adoring her and having thoughts that are wonderful about her and what wishing her the best and rooting her on with her new relationship with Travis Kelce. They're like, yes, it's so great. They're so great together. I mean, you know, so interesting. So as a parent, we can do that too. You know, our child might be not responding, not know a lot of things about us, you know, in the way we wish they did because we're, you know, changing and growing up and moving on with our life without them in it on the daily. And to be okay with that and say, regardless, I can do one-way connection. I can have amazing thoughts. I can have an amazing relationship with my child, regardless of what feels like they have with me, which is also my thoughts. Because who knows, them not, with boys especially, them not texting or calling once a week doesn't mean the same thing that it means to us. They're just, they're feeling great thoughts about us, but they just haven't reached out. And they're like, what's the big deal? I just don't do that, you know? And so we make a lot of meaning out of their behavior. So we got to drop the meaning, drop the expectations, and just focus on how am I showing up in the relationship? Who would I want to have a relationship with? I want to have a relationship with a person who's needing validation and enmeshed with me and grasping and complaining when I don't call? Probably not.
Right.
So,
and you know what? Thinking back, when I was in my 20s, I was busy being in my 20s. Like I was doing those things, was trying to build a career or, you know, grow a family and all of those things. So they too, they're busy. And it's not like we're not on their mind or they're not thinking about us. It's just that they're busy growing their lives and learning how to be an adult out in the world.
Yeah. And that's what we want.
Yes, exactly.
Really for them. We've been preparing them for 18 years to go do this. And then sometimes we have, you know, buyer's remorse. We're like, no, come back. We don't want to, you know, we don't want you to leave. So celebrating their independence and the fact that they're not needing to call us for every single thing. That's actually a really good thing.
Yeah. So, I can remember when my oldest son, when he left the nest, he had gotten a modeling contract in New York.
And wow. Look at
him go. I know. So,
so fun.
So we flew him up there to New York City. Like it felt like I was dropping off in, you know, a pack of wolves, you know, hungry wolves. Like, oh God, you know. And I was actually fine. I was like so excited for him, you know, to get this big modeling contract and oh my gosh, and living in New York City. I mean, it's like his dream. You could tell there was some fear though, too, like, oh my God. And I can remember. I was actually fine. And then the plane was taking off and it was dark and I could see the Statue of Liberty and all the lights, twinkling lights there in New York City. And then, oh my God, I started bawling on the plane. And my husband at the time was like, oh, are you okay? Like he had no clue. Like, of course, I'm crying because of Alex. I was like, oh my God, you know? And then my thought was, the question I had was, did I do enough? Did I teach him enough? Is he going to be okay? Like, I was like, there was no turning back. Like, did I prepare him to be in this pack of wolves, if you will, right. New York City, you know?
New York City for,
Yeah. And then finally, I just had to accept, like, yes, I've given him the tools that he needs to be the man that he needs to be in life. And if there's any tools that are not in the toolbox, he will get them.
Exactly.
It's like there's this trust you have to have. And I mean, I myself have kind of struggled between like, I'm definitely not the helicopter type of parent. I was never showing up to PTA meetings or any of that stuff. You know, like sometimes we're like, wait, what's her teacher's name? You know, I was like so bad. And at the same time, like try to be somewhat involved. Like, how do you find that happy medium of not being that helicopter mom all up in their stuff all the time and kind of like letting go and detaching? Like, how do you toggle between the two? I know.
I feel like I toggle between the two. There's three seasons of my life where I'm more here and when I'm not for lots of reasons. Oh, this is a great question. I think the key is just feeling that how you're showing up is respectful to what the child needs. So do they need more of me? Do they need less of me? And that as they become older, they don't need as they need to pull away and they need the independence. But if it's coming from a place of fear, they can't handle not having me around.
Yes.
They need me. I need to manage all of these decisions for them because they can't do it. I would say take a step back because that's not going to be serving them. But if
that's what we call codependency.
That's called codependency. And sometimes the helicopter parenting comes from this fear of I've got to control all of these things to make sure you have this perfect life or you don't have any problems or that I can take care of things for you. Our kids need a balance and there's seasons where they can handle more and sometimes they can't and that's okay where they have to come up against that kind of stuff and deal with all of the obstacles, the teachers, the friends, the not getting into the play or not making the team. And I think what you said was beautiful. It's just trusting that my child is equipped to handle all of life and trusting that I'll have the intuition to know when their nervous system is saying, I can't handle this anymore. This is becoming too much for me to handle. And so then we want to step in and either co-regulate their emotions or help them navigate their life with them.
Yeah.
And sometimes they are ready. And it's painful as parents sometimes to step away and watch them suffer. And there's situations that come in and out right now with certain kids where there's part of me that just wants to scoop somebody up and take them away and call people to say, can someone fill this need for my child? She needs this. And to be able to have the restraint to not do that. So I would say check the emotions that are fueling the actions to either step in or step back and just see if they feel aligned to the greater good for your child. Because that's really what we want. We want to create an environment where they can thrive, not the perfect environment where they don't have any hardship.
Do you ask yourself questions like, who am I? What is my purpose? Why am I living a life I don't love? Answers to these questions and more are revealed in the new Freedom at Midlife group coaching program, where I offer you a guaranteed roadmap to your own midlife makeover. In this powerful 7-week program, you will learn the 7 steps to freedom method to help you discover who you want to become, what life you want to live, and most importantly, how to get there. Instead of being lost in life, miserable in menopause, or struggling to juggle it all, you could reignite your love life, retire that dreadful job, and reinvent yourself. So, if you're ready to begin your midlife journey of transformation, filled with accountability, guidance, and support, then the time is now. Your midlife needs you to make a move. The Freedom at Midlife program is opening for enrollment soon with limited spots available. To be the first to know when we are open for enrollment, please join the waitlist now at freedomatmidlife.com and you will soon discover that next courageous step in creating your epic second half of life.
I've even said on this show before that, I mean, some people know some of the crap that I've been through my life and you know, if someone had taken any of that stuff away from me to try to like fix it, you know, or to make it all perfect, I would be pissed because all of the big T's and the little T's, big trauma, little trauma, it made me who I am today. I needed that trauma. It sounds crazy, but I did. It made me learn so much about myself and how to maneuver through life. And it brought me to create the Midlife Makeover show. It like created all of this, the ripple effect, right? So I think about that for myself in regards to my children. Like I don't want to take their pain away. I don't want to take their suffering away. It would be great if I could, but I really wouldn't want to because I know I'm like, this is your opportunity for growth. Yes, you just lost your job. What are you going to do about it?
Right.
Yes, this girl just totally stomped all over your heart. Here you go. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't say it quite that way.
But you believe in them.
And nicer,
yeah.
But
yeah.
But yeah, like you have to, like, how do you teach them how to ride a bike? Yep. Go ahead. Fall on your ass. Like, yep. What are you going to do? How are you going to get back up on that bike on your own? And so I think no matter if they're, you know, 2 years old or 20 years old or 30 years old, like it's ongoing. And I, you know, one more thing too, I was just thinking with my own parents, I reach out to them the most when I need them the most. And I reach out to them less when I'm good and I'm busy in my life. Mm-hmm. So when I think about my own kids, when I'm like, why have they texted me? What's going on with them? Do they not care about me? Oh, no, actually they're doing good and they're busy in their lives and they're living life their way. That's why. And when I do hear from them, it is because maybe someone stomped on their heart or they lost their job or whatever, right? And then we should be honored that we are the one that they go to in those times of need.
So honored that they come to us, that they choose to have us be their consultant. It's beautiful. And I love how you flipped it. It's how about celebrating when they're not reaching out? It's not a bad sign. It's a good sign. It's everything must be amazing for them. It's tricky when you are transitioning from littles to teens to adult children to figure out how to navigate that, because there is a period of grief, at least for me, as a stage ends. And it's not that I want it to never end. It's just a transition. It's just a realization that things are changing. And I love the obstacle thing. Somebody said they see it as going into the gym. And they're like, if you went to the gym and there were no weights, there was no resistance, you would literally create no muscles for yourself. Like there would be, so that's, it would be like coming down to this world or creating an environment for our children where we've removed all of the weights. We let them walk into the gym every day, but they're really not progressing. So it was a good analogy for me to think, okay, that's right. You know, back in the day. Okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I need the same thing too. It goes both ways.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we learn most about ourselves through relationship, not without. So like the struggle that we all have in relationship, all of our relationships, it teaches us about ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah. And through parenting, we learn so much about that, because it's a struggle to listen to a toddler cry for 30 minutes about something that our brain thinking, this is ridiculous. It's a cookie, or it's, you know, this toy, and or our teenager to talk about something that challenges us. That's our resistance. That's our opportunity for growth. Like, it's simultaneous. The child is learning to grow through the experience, and we're learning to have more capacity for compassion or for awareness of our own nervous system and the triggers we have, so we can deal with that. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the key is just to be mindful as you're maneuvering through it and looking back at ourselves, like, okay, how can I make, what's my part here? What can I do?
Yeah. Yeah. With the perspective, nothing's gone wrong. This is all exactly how it's supposed to be. And that acceptance allows our prefrontal cortex to stay on so that we can continue to make the best decisions for ourselves and our kids so that we can help them. So powerful.
I think that one of the large, well, at least it is for me, one of the toughest challenges in life is letting go.
Oh, yes.
Of anything. Just
going,
okay. You know, okay, fine. Yeah. I'm practicing that a lot.
I was listening to a meditation yesterday where it was breathe in, let, and the out was go, let go. Because you get really good at certain things, and then a new thing comes in and you have to learn to let go of this new thing. So it's a continual process.
And just allowing things to evolve as they will. And I mean, I was sharing with you, but a book deal coming my way.
Congrats.
When I first put my proposal out there in the universe, it was like, oh my God, I mean, I need a book deal. Like, I was like just constantly thinking about it. And then finally I was like, you know, what will be, like, I've learned throughout this wild ride through life that things will just unfold like the way that they will. And then you just kind of go along with it and like, okay, this happened. Okay. Now what, you know, and to not be too attached to the outcome. And I think even going back to the kids, it's like, try not to be too attached to the outcome of the relationship, like you're evolving individually, you're evolving collectively.
Right.
It's going to change. They're changing. I mean, I mean, if you think about it, let's just say if, you know, here I'm 51, you know, my youngest is 21, right? He's going through his 20s. I'm going through my 50s. Like, we're like, totally different. So different. Yeah. And then here it is, we're, you know, having a relationship together and experiencing totally different times of our lives. But I think it's just remembering that thread there, that just the thread of love and acceptance. And I think if you just keep that, then I feel like it's the best.
Everything starts
clicking.
You can
do as a mother. Yeah.
Everything starts clicking if there's not the resistance to what is. It yeah. truly is this beautiful through line, exactly what you're saying. Because once that happens, then I can navigate. But yeah. if I don't have that, I go into fight or flight and I'm fearful and worried and I'm not present to this moment. So
yeah,
that is when I talk to parents and they're struggling with a whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It really is the same whether they're toddlers or they're adults or in between the teens. It's getting to this place of neutralizing the experience and accepting it is always the first step. They want to jump to, no, what do I do? And I'm, no, back it up. You know, it's kind of like your book deal. It's like, what do I do? How do I get the book deal? It's like, no. How am I going to be as I present this book deal? Or how am I going to be for my child when they lay on the floor throwing a fit? And once I can get there, then the other steps come into place. Because I'm connected to myself. I'm connected to the child. My nervous system is not throwing I'm connected to my prefrontal cortex, not throwing that off. And it really is the first step.
Yeah, I think that's the key. It's being proactive. I mean, I think as a parent, you're concerned about what they are going to do or not do. But really, you have to look back at yourself and like, all right, how can I be proactive here and be the leader of love.
I often say like the sign of a great parent has nothing to do with the child's behavior. Everything to do with the parents' behavior. Like if you want to use that as your measuring stick, it's just, and it's not to incriminate yourself and don't beat yourself up about it. It's just let whatever the kid's behavior looks like, accept that and just refocus. How do you want to show up for them? How do you want to help them? How do you want to regulate with them? How do you want to remind them? And then
at any moment, again, you can change that you can change the relationship that you have with your child. It's never too late to do that. And they will be so, so appreciative because you're making such a huge difference for them for when they have children and then their partnership, all of that, like the relationship they have with their mother is like pretty powerful.
Very powerful. And I love just reminding everybody that it's never too late. Cause as soon as we change, then there's a ripple that happens. So I always say, just prepare to be surprised. Once you calm your nervous system down and you accept, the people around you feel that change and they get an opportunity to show up differently in the relationship too. So you never know what you can create from the inside out. It's inside job.
The power of the mother.
The power of the mother. I love it.
You know, right? That's your next book title.
I need to do that. I need to brainstorm with you. Next book title.
Mom power. So tell us about your book.
Oh, it was an amazing adventure. Something that I never ever thought I would be writing a book, but it just came and it needed to be written. And so, it's called Connect Method Parenting. Try to keep it simple. All the things are the same name. And it goes through a lot of what we're talking about is how do I control what I can actually control? How can I show up in a way where I am the most mature, regulated person in the environment so that I can be who I want to be, so that I can respect the kind of parent that I want to be and get to be and look back and review, all with so much kindness and generosity to ourselves. So there's no shoulding in the book. There's no coulda, woulda, it's just love and accept yourself and then show up in a connected way and really honor the experience the child's having too, so that were not trying to rush their process. You know, and I get this when I was had littles, especially I wanted the temper tantrum or the fight. I wanted it to be over now. Can you just, it makes me so uncomfortable when you're fighting. It makes me so uncomfortable when the dishes are in the sink and no one's doing their jobs. And to realize, oh, okay, I'm wanting you to change because of an emotion I'm feeling. I need to deal with this emotion. And then we can talk about getting chores more regular or helping you navigate this big emotional experience. And so the book is really a love letter to all parents saying, you can do this. It's never too late. And the steps to get there are simple and doable and clear. And it starts with accepting. And once we accept and we calm our own nervous system down, then we can guide our children through whatever experience they're having in a kind, respectful way where we're marrying compassion because we want that as parents. But a lot of parents get worried. They think, oh, if I'm compassionate and too accepting, I'm going to be passive. And that's not healthy. The studies show that. So we have the data and just we know from experience. So we have to also marry the firmness of limits and boundaries because our nervous systems actually do need those limits and boundaries. And so it's also a book where we communicate, what does that look like? Because there's not a ton of examples out in the world where you see that married together beautifully, where someone can show up with so much compassion, but also so much firmness and interact with, you know, the children. I feel like Dead Poets Society is a good movie where is shown so beautiful. Yes. This deep trusting relationship, but also he had to teach the class and he had to keep the boys going, right? But they were so motivated to listen to him. They wanted to do what he asked them because they had chosen him to be their leader. They had made that choice. And as parents, that's what we want. We want them to choose us to be their leader, so to speak, to opt in, to have us be the most impactful, influential person in their life, especially when they're young. But even as adults, I mean, we want to be part of that team that they've assembled to have impact and influence. And so we do that not through controlling and not through trying to fix them, but just really accepting them and growing ourselves up in the process. Parenting is one of the best ways to emotionally up-level your life.
Oh, gosh, right? What's your advice for a parent out there that is dealing with a child that, and even if it's an adult child, that has addiction issues or maybe, you know, issues with whatever, anxiety and depression, is really struggling through life. How do you manage a relationship like that?
And I'll talk generally because there's some nuances to this. If it's obviously if they're unsafe, you need to get them to help and intervene. So, you know, take care of that. But if it's just maybe an addiction to video games or to something that you don't feel is dangerous or deadly, I should say, I would start with accepting that as they're part of their journey. I had such a good friend say to me once, she was a recovered, she had been an alcoholic and recovered. And she said, you know, I would never want anybody to have to experience that journey I went through, but I would never not have it as part of my life. I know things because I'm a recovering addict that you will never know, Andy.
Yeah.
And I think as a parent, sometimes we don't want our kids to suffer. We think we know what their path should look like so they have this great life, but to trust that I actually have no idea what skills they need. And maybe they need to take this scary path and I'm going to be there and support them. And I'm going to keep them as safe as I possibly can. But I'm also going to believe in their goodness and know that I'm not in charge of their life. How arrogant of me to think I know exactly what path they should take and what decisions they should make, and trust that they're going to learn the lessons they need to from that experience. And maybe that's the only way they can learn them. So it's this balance of I want to show up and make sure I'm aware and stepping in as needed, combined with a deep level of trust in their process being different than my process and knowing when to intervene, but not from a place that they're broken and I need to fix them, but I want to create safety and keep the dialogue open and help and assist And when we come with that energy, they are more open to receiving. An intervention we do out of fear and worry, and they can feel the judgment just coming out of us, which is well intended. We might be coming from a place of deep love for that individual, but when they feel that judgment, they're less likely to even receive the help. So,
yeah,
it's a balance. I don't know if you have.
Yeah, that's a tough one. We might even have to have a whole separate episode on that.
It's a beautiful
a big one.
Conversation to have.
Yeah
it's important too.
Yeah, because I know a lot of parents out there suffer. My parents did with my brother, and he had severe addiction. And I know one thing that flipped for me, even though I wasn't his parent, I was obviously his sister, was that moment of what will be, and accepting. And, you know, you can only do so much. And you can love them, and despite their dark times, right? Mm-hmm. And you can still, you know, be that common thread of love for them, that exactly. groundedness for them. So yeah, it's tough. That's very, very, very challenging, I think, for a lot of people. And I saw my parents suffer through that. But it goes back to what you were saying of like, you have to take care of yourself no matter what. Like, you have to love yourself as a mom, as a woman. You have to be able to take care of yourself. And yeah, that's the best thing that you can do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I want to remind everyone, accepting them doesn't mean you condone
yes.
or agree with it. They're very
right.
different. And I think sometimes we think if I'm unconditionally loving them, then I'm saying, mm-hmm. go keep going doing that bad habit.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's important we separate the two. And I ditto to what you said, we have to take care of ourselves so that we are equipped to handle these tricky situations and show up in a way that truly can serve the other person. If we're so depleted or we're so triggered in our own nervous system, we are not going to be able to see cleanly
yes.
what's going on or what needs to be done.
And knowing you can't fix it all.
Yeah. And sometimes what we think is broken is beautiful. There's that Japanese, you know, broken plates, and they put it back together with the gold in between, you know, and it's even stronger, you know, that whole.
I'm trying to think of the name of it.
I can't think of it either, but that's the imagery I like to bring into my head when my brain is so convinced something is, you know, not the way it should be. And to think, I just don't know, maybe this is even going to turn out better on the other end somehow. And
yeah, it's interesting that you brought that up. My art therapist had, but she teaches workshops where she literally like breaks a bowl on purpose and then puts it back together. Mm. And then you color it and paint it and make it your, you know, your own. And that's like, I mean, all of like our lives individually, collectively, our kids, our spouses, you know, like they will either intentionally or unintentionally break their lives apart, and they have to put it back together.
Right.
They got to put something back together.
They got to go do it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And to believe that it's possible that the piece of art that's put back together is even more magnificent than what it was before. Like, to step into that belief. Yeah, it's process, but lots of trust here. Lots of trust and acceptance.
I know.
Trust and acceptance. And reminding myself nothing's gone wrong. There's a reason for this. It's a lot. But it's so good.
And and they are perfect just the way they are.
They really are.
And that you are perfect just the way that you are, right?
Exactly.
Perfectly imperfect.
Perfectly imperfect. That's how it's, I mean, if it's supposed to be a different way, then something got mixed up, because it doesn't seem to be any different for any other person.
I know. God, this has been so good. You have to come back again. We got more stuff
love
to talk about.
I know, we could dig into so many different.
I know. Yeah.
Shoots we could have gone down, but.
Yeah. And y'all have to go to her website. I love your website.
Oh, thank you.
I'm kind of a nerd about that stuff. But I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cute. I love the colors and the design. I love your book design. It's so perfect. That's perfect.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. I'm just kidding.
Yes. Yeah, right.
And no, I tried to have a lot of fun and reflect connectmethodparenting.com.
Yeah. So connectmethodparenting.com. And then we can also find you social media. Same handle name.
Same. Yeah. Connectmethodparenting.com.
You've been so great.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Any final words to the parents out there in the world?
To the parent, any final? That's such a good question.
Such a broad.
Yeah. I think that based on what we talked about, just remembering that the most important growth that we're going to have as a parent happens in the middle of the chaos and the conflict and the frustration and the anger. And whether we grow after the fact, we realize, oh, the next day, oh, I didn't show up the way I wanted to, or we interrupt, it doesn't matter. That anytime we can pause and notice what we were doing, have more awareness, accept where we were, and then realize we can make a different choice moving forward, that can be life-changing when we accept that the growth doesn't happen outside of these moments that don't feel like they're going well. The growth happens in the middle of the moment. So
just remember that.
Thank you.
Messy middle. The beautiful messy middle.
Yeah. We want it. We wouldn't want it to be any other way, but sometimes
I know. It'd be boring.
It'd be so boring. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really, really fun, Wendy. I appreciate it. And I love the work you're doing. I love the work you're doing.
Maybe I'll see you in Portugal someday.
Yeah, I hope so. Maybe this fall. We'll see. You
know. All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Did this podcast inspire you, challenge you, trigger you to make a change, or spit out your coffee laughing? Good. Then there are three ways you can thank me. Number one, you can leave a written review of this podcast on Apple iTunes. Number two, you can take a screenshot of the episode and share it onto social media and tag me, Wendy Valentine. Number three, share it with another midlifer that needs a makeover. You know who I'm talking about. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Get out there and be bold, be free, be you.